Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head to head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of this week's Clash. So, on Monday, we were in Derry, Maine, and damn it if we can't get enough of the place as we're heading right back there because Pennywise is back. But he's had a 21st century makeover because from 2017 and 2019, we're doing them both. It's It, chapters 1 and 2.
Derry's not like any town I've ever been in before. People die or disappear 6 times the national average. And that's just grown-ups. Kids are worse. Way, way worse.
If you'll come with me, you'll float too.
George.
You'll float too. You'll float too. You'll float too. You'll float too.
We'll have a winner at the end of the show, but which film will it be? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Butters. Tasty, tasty, beautiful fear.
I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
How are you both?
Very well.
Yes, good.
Final show of the Halloween countdown.
And then I think at the end we should pick our favourite Stephen King film of the month.
Oh, I mean, that would have been nice to know beforehand, but yeah, sure.
I think you can work out in your head.
I think I've already done it, actually. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't need that much time. You're right. Absolutely right. Very quickly, if you haven't subscribed to us here at Clash Pod, if you'd be kind enough to do that, that would be amazing on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. We'd appreciate it, all three of us. And if you're able to give us a little rating and review, we'd be very grateful. And if you do have time to give us a review, it may be read out on the show by Chris Tilley, a.k.a. Chris Thrilly, which sounds a bit like this.
It's from Mason Storm PL, who says, love the show, always gives me a laugh, and love the chemistry between the hosts. Brilliant reviews and anecdotes, and Vicky's laugh is just downright infectious. I think I may be a little bit in love with her. Kissy emoji, 5 stars.
Wow, okay.
Oh my god,
oh, no.
Lost for words. Never seen that before.
No, We got some red face.
The flushing. She's flushing.
Oh god. No, but it's because normally I think my laugh is in the, I would say, top three things that people find most annoying about me.
Not for Mason Storm.
Great. Well, it's good to know I've got options.
Ooh. Mason Storm sounds like the kind of guy who'd bring you a beer in the bath.
Well, then we're on.
Mason Storm. I mean, I'd love to go out with someone called Mason Storm.
Well, work on your laugh and see what happens.
Mason Storm.
That's my real laugh. It's a fake laugh that I use for this show. All right, then. My choices this week, It, the 1990 miniseries versus It's Chapter 1 and 2. Because what better way to finish off our countdown to Halloween, the greatest night of the year, and our celebration of the master of horror than by ending our month of King versus King with the most terrifying iteration of one of his monsters in Tim Curry's Pennywise versus the highest grossing adaptation in the history of horror cinema. It's Chapter 1. And it's up to. So, ready to go? Ready to go?
Yeah.
All right. On Monday, Vicky was our 90s guide through the sewers of Derry, which means today, Chris is seeing what they look like with a $20 million makeover. Chris takes on a journey.
Substitute Bill for Tim, remove the word grating, ignore the last bit, and take it away, Vicky.
I never had any friends like the ones I had when I was 12. Jesus, does anyone? Well, yeah, Richard Dreyfuss in another Stephen King story of childhood bonds and fears. I do, actually. But that's because I didn't make them battle the Eater of Worlds with scrap metal and an inhaler, which is what young Bill does to his friends, the Losers Club, when a malevolent force, which principally takes the form of an evil clown because Tim Curry is amazing, reappears in Derry, Maine, as part of a 30-year cycle to eat all the kids and give everyone nightmares forever. But they didn't kill it, did they? Because of the aforementioned lack of weapons. And so now grating adult versions of these sweet kids go at it again, still with no proper weapons, and then literally tear it apart with their bare hands and I think excavate its heart using its own spidery limbs to crack open its own exoskeleton. Turns out 20 years of repressed anger and paralyzing fear is more deadly than an inhaler. Who knew?
Now, hopefully Blondine will have spliced in Vicky's introduction from Monday there. So thanks for that, Vicky.
You're welcome.
Anything interesting happening around your first viewing of this? Because these films are relatively new.
Me? No, not really. I was trying to remember. I went to the Odeon Holloway to see It Chapter 1. The one on Holloway Road, just around the corner from our studio, weirdly enough. And I remember watching it and thinking, this is good. I am enjoying this film, but not being particularly scared by it, which, granted, this is going back, a few years now, so I'm an adult watching it, at least physically, but there is one moment in it where I jumped so much, much more than in any moment in the first one, which doesn't have any jump scares, I don't think, really. One moment in this where I jumped so much, some children nearby laughed at me because I came out of my seat. I was like, I projected into the air and fucking kids went, and I was like,
dickhead.
With a girl, didn't look cool. I was back in school, pulling a blood clot from my nose. It's the same thing.
Vicky, were these both first watches for you?
Yeah, I didn't go anywhere near them because I knew I was terrified of it. I watched them, you know, when I told you I went to Halifax the other week and did Jaeger bombs with that magician, I watched them on the train.
Charlie Chuckle,
I believe. From Leeds to Halifax. And I was trying to watch it, and I was fine watching it, and I wasn't that scared. But the train just filled up with a lot of elderly people and it suddenly felt very inappropriate to have my iPad on the table that we were sharing. And I just felt really guilty about watching it in front of them. So I had to stop.
It's a strange.
Why?
It's just
they're
so
old enough.
That's true. Yeah, it's the rating works for them. I just felt bad about it. Nice people, nice older people. It's not what they wanted.
I don't think I watched Chapter 2 until it came out on home viewing. I don't think I did a cinema experience.
No, I didn't because of the reviews and word of mouth made me think, yeah. And also the length. Everyone was complaining about the length. And so it's like, this is one I can watch at home. Mm-hmm. But I had a better introduction to the first film because I went to Comic-Con to meet the kids in it and the director.
Oh, wow.
So they did a screening of some footage from the film. Maybe it was more like sizzle reel trailer stuff because the only lengthy sequence they showed was the one of them jumping into the water at the quarry and all the stuff around that, which was, you know, the real Stand By Me stuff. And it was just brilliant. You thought, oh, they might have something here if they've managed to pull off the scary stuff because this feels like a really great kids movie. So, yeah, I saw that and then met all the actors in a bar and the director. And they're all nice.
Yeah.
Yep. As I say, the second one, same as you, Al.
He's had quite a good career, hasn't he, Andy Muschietti, in a very short amount of time. I remember, because it was only 2013, I remember watching Mama, which I thought was quite good.
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good.
It was all right. And then his next movie, 5 years later, was It. And then It Chapter 2, both of which did very well. Now he's doing The Flash.
The Flash, yeah. But he wasn't the first director on this project.
No.
So there's been two major phases of planning for this film. And the first was with Cary Fukunaga, who boarded it in 2012 and co-wrote the script with Chase Palmer as a Warner Brothers picture.
It's a shame he hasn't done anything since, poor Cary.
Well, you're mates with him now, aren't you?
Yeah.
Did you talk to him about it?
I didn't, actually. No, it's weird. When you're at a Bond premiere, they tend to like you to talk about Bond. Yeah, I hosted the Royal.
No, but I mean, at like 4 a.m. in the bar, did you ask him about it?
Not in an official back. Bond interview.
Yeah, no, I was still talking about Bond at that point.
No, fine. I mean, keep it positive. What about that filth that you left? So the decision was taken to start the story off in the 1980s and to split the two eras across two films rather than cutting back and forth. And I think you can see why he got the gig, because of True Detective cuts back and forth in time.
Yeah.
And the final episode is in this freaky house, similar to so much of this film takes place in that house, the Nebot house here. So producer Dan Lin said, the most important thing is that Stephen King gave us his blessing. We didn't want to make the film unless we felt it was the right way to go. And we sent him the script. The response that Cary got back was, go with God, please. This is the version the studio should make. So King wanted that version. Then the film moved to New Line in 2014, which is part of Warner Brothers, but they want to reinvigorate this sort of genre arm of the company. And Cary said that is when things started to go wrong. He said, and this is a while after the fact, I think New Line's view of what they wanted and my view of what I wanted were very different. I wanted to do a drama with horror elements, more like The Shining. I think they wanted to do something more like Annabelle. That was essentially the disconnect. A year later, Will Poulter was cast as Pennywise. Mm. And then a few weeks after that, Cary Fukunaga dropped out. He said, I was trying to make an unconventional horror film. It didn't fit into the algorithm of what they knew they could spend and make money back on based on not offending their standard genre audience, which is cutting.
The use of the word algorithm there. It's like, there's no creativity there. It's all maths.
He added, they didn't want any characters. They wanted archetypes and scares.
It would have been such a waste if that had actually happened. Look, I enjoy the Annabelle movies. I don't mind them. I think they're fine, but they are not what you should do with this property.
Mm. Yeah, and I've read around trying to figure out exactly what was in the Cary Fukunaga version. So here's a few things that might be of interest. In his script, Bill is called Will.
Right, correcting that mistake. Yeah.
But equally, I can see how that would really piss off fans. Like, why change Bill to Will?
Yeah, Ben is called Wen and Bev is called Wen. So it's not the move in the right direction you think it is.
Right. Well, some of it's strange. Henry Bowers becomes Travis Bowers. Don't know why. There's more Mike, and you find out that his family was burned at the Black Spot nightclub by the Legion of Decency, which is a version of the Ku Klux Klan, under the control of Pennywise. And interestingly, a friend of Mike's dad escapes from that fire, and that is Dick Halloran.
Ooh,
from The Shining.
Lovely.
So a little bit of shared universe going on there. And another thing that connects it to The Shining is that in this version, Pennywise first appears to Stan as a naked woman getting out of a bath.
That's so interesting.
Not a lady in a painting, which we end up with this film.
Well, we didn't really talk about that on Monday, but it's very interesting that Pennywise is a he throughout.
Yes.
And then the spider at the end is actually a she because they kill its eggs. Mm. So it's a woman, a female.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm.
Thanks for bringing up my change. there's a bit more racism in this book. The book strongly alludes to Bev being abused by her father. She isn't a damsel in distress in this version because she never gets captured by Pennywise. There's flashbacks to the Silver Dollar Saloon. I don't know if you remember that from the book in 1879. This character, Claude Heroux, slaughters everyone around him with an axe in this saloon, and he's driven to madness by Pennywise, a sort of glimpse at stuff happening in the past.
This is the stuff I really would have liked to have seen, because as I said on Monday, I'm so fascinated by the history of Derry and what it has done every 27 years as it is in the film. And I'd love to have seen that. And, Andy Muschietti's version does do some history and does try and create like a history for it, but it doesn't do it very well.
All right, I'm going to jump to, I was going to do this at the end, but there is a deleted scene from this movie about the history that, again, trying to piece together what happened. Bill Skarsgård, who we're going to get to, spoke on a Variety's Playback podcast and said there was a scene that we shot that was a flashback from the 1600s before Pennywise was Pennywise. The scene turned out really, really disturbing, and I'm not the clown. I look more like myself. It's very disturbing. Sort of a backstory for what it or where Pennywise came from. So I think that might be a scene that's been circulating online where Pennywise visits a woman settler and says he wants to eat her baby.
Right.
She refuses, and he says if not, he'll eat her and her husband and her other children and everyone else in the village. So she gives him the baby, and we hear him eating the baby as we look into her eyes, and her expression changes from fear to denial to grief to acceptance, and then nothing, just a glazed look as if nothing horrific is actually happening.
Wow.
And that's quoting from the actual script page there.
I would quite like to see that scene.
It sounds amazing. Yeah.
I would like that scene.
And potentially it was filmed.
Wow. That's it. See, and what we get is like a mishmash of like, we're going to get to it, but is it an alien in this version?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is, definitely.
Let's go on to phase two then, with Mama director Andy Muschietti. A quote from him, he said, the way Carey intended to execute the script is something that only he can talk about. I can say my version of it is highly emphasises Pennywise's most terrifying virtue, which is his inability to materialise into your worst fear. I want to take people on a journey into Pennywise's world through a disturbing, surrealistic and intoxicating experience that will leave nobody at ease. So while they used Carey for, he's got a script credit on the final film. They said the big thing was playing up the shape-shifting qualities. And regarding the monsters, Andy said, I wanted to bring out deeper fears based not only on movie monsters, but on childhood traumas. So in 2016, Will Poulter was out. People spoken about for this role were, seriously spoken about, were Mark Rylance, Ben Mendelsohn, Hugo Weaving and Tilda Swinton.
Cool.
I'm interested in Tilda Swinton on that list, and I think Ben Mendelsohn could have been quite interesting. Those are my two from that list.
Yeah, my issue...
Hugo Weaving's too evil already.
My issue with Tilda Swinton is too frightening. Just too scary.
What?
Tilda Swinton's too frightening.
Too good at being scary.
Yeah, it would be too scary. It would be unwatchable.
I think you're right.
So Bill Skarsgård got the role. Someone who I'd not really seen before, obviously aware of his brother, but did you know who he was going into this?
I did not, other than him being Alex Skarsgård's brother.
So it's cool to see a new face, really. I thought that was really interesting. Everyone wanted to be someone famous. Doesn't have to be. Pennywise is the star.
Do you know that the most amazing fact, though, about him getting the role that they discovered after they'd cast the role?
No. I don't know. No.
That he... So Andy Muschietti sort of was like, I really need your eyes to go in different directions.
Oh, wow.
And Bill Skarsgård went...
Like this?
I can do that. I can actually do that. And Andy Muschietti actually says, what are the chances? It's one in a million. And he was already cast. So even in those moments when his eyes move, it was all him. In the storm drain when he goes limp, it's like, it fucked me up. It's all him.
I was obsessed with that because I was like, how have they done that? I was like, has he got blank contacts and then they've CGI'd the eye? Like, how have they done it? But he just did it. I didn't know that.
Amazing fact.
And that was my whistle stop tour through the background.
Awesome.
Because we've got lots to talk about.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Is that it? I should credit the Movie Facts Instagram site, which is where I actually found that fact about his eyes.
Okay.
So there you go.
Sure. Okay.
That's all right. Why are you making that weird face?
No, it's
you
just,
did a good thing.
I'm just trying
just
to be...
about, is it because you just nicked it at the last minute? You're like, fuck.
No. Movie Facts is his thing.
Oh, is that?
Yeah,
oh, is it?
He's plugging himself.
No,
I'm not, because I'm not referencing just the facts, which is the podcast, but Grant, who runs Movie
Facts. You just done it now.
Well, now I've done it.
That's my fault.
That is your fault. You should have just let it go and not been so intently looking at my stupid face, pulling stupid expressions, feeling guilty.
Right, come on, we've got 5 hours of this bugger to get through.
Right.
So, chapter one, October 1988, Bill is crafting the SS Georgie. So we've seen this twice now.
Yeah.
That family isn't that poor.
Yeah.
Can they not afford a boat that isn't made of paper?
Can they not afford...
Who has a paper boat?
Can they not afford a Nintendo system? I mean, literally, there's a couple of moments in this where you go, I love the fact you've moved it to 1988. No kid is making his younger brother a toy boat that kid is like, I can't wait for this boat. I'm fucking playing Mario. Leave me the fuck alone.
I'm glad we both thought that. But I think it helps probably that we're similar age to the kids, aren't we? In 88, I was 10, you were 9, yeah. You were 3. See what I did there?
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. I wasn't, but thank you.
So yeah, I could put myself in the shoes of these characters.
If my little brother had come in and gone, can you make me a boat? And I'd be like, absolutely.
When have I ever made you a boat?
What are you doing in my room? When have I made you anything? Get out.
You want a kick in the bollocks?
Do you know what you should do?
Because I will give you a kick in the bollocks.
Do you know what you should fucking do, James? Go and play near that storm drain. Have fun.
Well, we follow Georgie down the rainy street and it's so beautifully shot.
You're watching
a movie, aren't you? You're watching a frigging movie. I'm going to focus on this scene for a moment and then we'll fly through the rest of it. But I think immediately Bill's Pennywise is less friendly and welcoming than Tim Curry's.
Sure.
I think I would have run a mile immediately.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I will say just in the run-up to him appearing, the sound quality on this made such a difference. Watching this compared to obviously a 1990 version, but it was so ominous echoing around my living room. Mm.
But the mouth open wide, huge teeth bite the arm off, and that long arm pulls him in. And it's 10 minutes in, and I don't know, it's a brilliant mini horror film, isn't it? And I felt such sadness.
Yeah.
The kid's really great. The kid's really great. Both Georgies are great.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was most of our favourite scenes on Monday, and it's brilliantly done here as well.
And they find different ways to make him sympathetic. In the 1990 version, it's when he sees the boat going down the drain. He's like, no, no. And this is where he smacks his head on the thing.
It falls
over because... Oh, he's watching the boat so intently.
Yeah. I'm going to cry. Stop talking about it.
But that shot from above where he's crawling away from the drain and he's already had his arm torn off and he's like struggling. And the clown hand, because this is new from the first movie, the clown hand, because you think if I get far enough, even I've lost an arm, you're probably not even thinking about that. But if I get far enough away, I'll still be safe and maybe someone will help me. And it's the extendo arm that just comes out. And it's like, again, like we said with the plug hole in 1990 version, bending the rules of physics.
Wait, he lost the arms race, didn't he?
Oh, God. It's so upsetting, that scene. And yet that works. Yeah, I'm good with that. I'm good with that.
Cut to June 1989. What a summer that was. And this is from the Cary Fukunaga script. The kids are already a gang. So we just get on with it.
Yeah.
The new kid at school, Ben, embarrasses himself.
I know we've got a lot to get through. I forgot to change my T-shirt. Just give me one sec. I'm going to change my T-shirt. It's important.
Okay.
Trust me.
You know this is an audio podcast.
You can carry on, but you need to see this.
This is an audio podcast. All right, I'll carry on then.
Are you really good? All right. Yeah, no, great. Oh, no, here he is.
Okay. I'll keep talking.
You don't mind me changing in front of you?
No.
This is about me. The new kid embarrasses himself in front of Bev because she discovers he's listening to New Kids on the Block.
Yeah.
Machete added that in. That's his invention. And I loved it because I was a massive blockhead, as we used to call ourselves.
Oh, that's nice. I loved them too.
Who's your favourite?
Joey, obviously.
Me too.
Since I was little, yeah. Now like I'm Joey. Older, then it wouldn't be. But
Hanging tough.
Oh, I love it.
Hanging tough.
Put your shirt on.
Jesus Christ.
Gee whiz. So I wouldn't have been embarrassed by my New Kids on the Block love back
then. No, that's
then.
What's good about you. You don't give a shit, do you? Like, no. I like the Spice Girls. Why is that so
It'll make sense in a minute. I'll explain.
All right. Okay.
Right. Done.
I don't know. Do we cut all that out?
No, it's fine.
I feel like you've spoiled it.
It'll be worth it for this T-shirt.
I love the way Ben stares at Bev while she's signing his book.
Yeah.
I think it's a very real moment. And the fact that he says, please don't go, girl. New Kids on the Block. I definitely would have done something like that.
And it's the bit where he goes, that's another lyric.
So as we said on Monday, another addition to this version of it is Bill's been trying to figure out what happened to Georgie. Because they haven't found his arm, Bill still thinks Georgie is alive. So it's sort of, it adds more of an investigative kind of aspect to what happens in this first movie. Batman Lethal Weapon 2 are on at the cinema.
Yeah.
Apparently they only showed Warner Brothers films that summer.
I got confused though, because I'm an idiot, because I forgot that it was in America. So I was like, Batman was actually a 12. Wait, that was only the UK. Because when it says Batman PG-13, I was like, what's wrong? Is that an Easter egg of some kind?
Just no.
It's not.
Right.
The kids are riding around on their bikes. I feel like we've got that Spielbergian, Amblin, small town.
Let's talk about this right now. This manages to do Stand By Me. Mm-hmm. The Goonies,
yes.
Stranger Things,
yes.
All at once. It's so well done. And obviously, because this is R-rated, hearing the kids fucking effing and swearing. I can't believe I said fucking effing. And swearing at each other. It makes it very real. And I think the relationships between these child actors is phenomenal. I think the young Eddie is really good. And I found out, you know who he is? The guy who plays the young Eddie.
He's very good in Shazam.
Yeah, he's very good in Shazam. Yeah, he's he's had a great way into
it. Who is he, Alex?
He's Brian Grazer's nephew.
Oh, is he? Oh. Yeah.
He's done all right. Yep.
I disagree with you about the, like, I mean, I think when you're an older person, right, and young people, especially young boys, like all they talk about is wanking and you're a mum and all the rest of it. And then they have these about turns later on where they make these huge speeches where they sound exactly like adults. So there's a point later where Eddie says to his mum, you made me abandon my friends when I needed them the most. And Bill has this big speech on the steps where he's like, I need to go in this house because it's easier than going home. And kids don't talk like that. Whether or not they only talk about wanking, I don't know. But they have these massive switches where all of a sudden they're mini adults, and that felt really false.
Mm. It's interesting you mentioned the Stranger Things influence on this, because of course, were it not for this, we wouldn't have Stranger Things, because the Duffer brothers wanted to make It. And they were on it briefly, I think, or they pitched for it. They didn't get it. And so they went away and wrote Stranger Things.
Mm.
That's how we. That's why we got Stranger Things.
Oh, I forgot this the wrong way around. So Finn Wolfhard in
Stranger
this?
Things first, yeah.
Oh, he was in Stranger Things first. Right, fine.
And so it's Ben here. I think Mike, as we mentioned on Monday, I don't think Mike's very well served in this version either. No. Ben's the one that's studying Derry's history. He's learning about the death and destruction in the history books in the library.
Oh, yeah, that's a total steal from Mike, isn't it? Jesus. Yeah.
And that's a good scene in the library. The balloon floats by, leads him to a headless figure chasing him through the filing cabinets, all a bit Ghostbusters. And that turns into Pennywise.
I will say this. I think some of the scares in this are great. I think some of the scares are too effects heavy.
Yep.
And I think that's an interesting thing with Pennywise himself. But we'll get on to that.
Yeah, I think chapter 2 is worse than this one as well for that. But
yeah, true.
He's caught by the bullies who beat him up, and Henry starts carving his name into Ben's stomach until he escapes, which I remember that very vividly from the book. And it's terrifying.
And interesting that in the 1990 version, he doesn't.
He holds the
knife to
it.
He holds the knife to him. And then one of his friends actually goes, whoa, Henry, what are you doing? But in this one, he actually carves the H in, which is interesting.
Well, we established on Monday, though, is because you couldn't have kids in jeopardy in the TV version. So, I mean, you wouldn't cut that out because it's a very effective moment.
Well, we've got a new friend as well, Patrick Hochstetter, who loves an aerosol, likes flaming, seems like a bit of a psychopath, and wears a T-shirt with a faded cartoon cat on it.
Right.
That's what this T-shirt is. I saw Patrick Hochstetter's T-shirt. I went, I'm having that.
We just bought it off the internet.
Because I'm that twat who sees T-shirts in films now and goes, yeah, I like that T-shirt, and then buys it. It was like I had the Monster Squad one, Stephen King Rules, on Monday. I've got the Sriracha, sauce one from the Boys TV show, and now I've got Patrick Hochstetter as
cat. Does Alex know this is an audio podcast?
No.
Okay.
But it's for you.
No, I like it.
Okay.
Do you actually like it?
Yeah, I do like it. Pretty I thought cool. it was faded because it was old, but now I realise you bought it off the internet yesterday.
I do not think the payoff lived up to the setup.
Really?
Yep. And hopefully we can snip it all.
Oh, okay. Fine. Old scissor hands over there.
So they help Ben head to the chemist for supplies to patch him up. And that's where Bev is buying Tampax. And they team up with Bev.
Big problem here. She's nervous of her period. She doesn't want them to see the tampons. So she hides the tampons behind her back because she's like, oh, fuck tampons. Then when she's flirting in quote marks with the pharmacist, the box of tampons is very visible. If you were nervous of your period and you were embarrassed by the tampons, you wouldn't have them on the counter when you were flirting.
Isn't that because he's an adult, though, and she's, you know, and a pharmacist, and it's more about sort of boys her own age she's worried about being embarrassed about?
I think it's very difficult to flirt over a box of tampons. I've tried it. It's hard.
I think it's a weird change because I'm pretty sure in the book it's Eddie fakes an asthma attack or something to distract him. But I guess it's their way of playing up her sexuality or her confused sexuality that she's using it as a weapon already.
Yeah.
It's a creepy looking pharmacist.
Oh,
as well.
Because the dad in the next scene sees her Tampax and he sort of smiles satanically and then sniffs her.
Yeah,
and then asks if she's still his little girl.
Yeah. Which is like the stuff in Gerald's Game. Stephen, I don't know if they've not lifted it, but it's something in the mix there.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think? I know you didn't like, you weren't a fan of Henry Bowers Jr. in the 1990 version. What do you think of Nicholas Hamilton, who plays him in this?
I think he's great. He's really good. I just still, it's not a criticism about the performance. It's just that there's a lot of extra story going on in an already long film, and I don't think it needs it. And I think if you're going to, you've got a book of source material, are you remaking the 1991? And one of my bugbears with this is that you had the chance to do it differently. And I think you could have cut down the Henry stuff. Mm. It's just really personal thing. I just think there's so much story.
But I think what they're doing here is they're trying to play up the fact that Pennywise has poisoned the whole town, his Henry's dad, poisoned Henry, and several other characters. So I think they felt the need to bring in all these other characters just to show us that this is not just one clown and one creature that's doing all this.
Yeah, I feel like I missed it. I just felt like Henry's dad was a horrible person and Bev's dad was a horrible person, and I just didn't quite get that. But that's on me, though. I just missed it.
We talked about this on Monday, the TV show that's on when Bev walks into the living room and it is going, go and play in the sewers, children.
Do you think that's a TV show that's been broadcast all over town? I thought that was just Pennywise appearing to him.
Me too.
Oh, maybe.
Mm. I mean, it's an interesting concept, but he can do what he likes, can't he? He could do either.
Yeah, anyway. And it's sort of in the background as well. But I thought it fed into this idea that you're saying of Derry itself being evil and him controlling every facet of it.
Yeah.
Boys in pants spitting off a cliff. I like this because, as I say, this is the one I saw at Comic-Con. You know, Bev shows up. She jumps off before them and then we'll play in the water. It's really lovely, naturalistic, elemental. I love the way it's shot.
I like it. What are the chances of all your friends having exactly the same pair of pants?
Well, boxer shorts hadn't come in. Didn't come in until that Levi's advert.
I hadn't thought of it.
I know.
No one wore boxer shorts till that Levi's advert.
Do you know what? You're absolutely right.
Which but was still, 87.
There were two-tone Y-fronts. You could get some brown and cream ones. You could get some red and green ones.
I think I only had white and blue Y-fronts until the boxers became a thing.
What Levi's advert?
The laundrette one. When Nick Kamen walks in and he's sitting in his... suddenly boxer shorts took off.
Yeah.
Learn your pant history.
Sorry. I'm...
Have you done a media studies A level? You fool.
No, I'm in trunks these days, though.
Oh, okay. We didn't ask.
I'm sorry. I thought you wanted to know.
And I like the fact they play Bust a Move, because that's one of my favourite songs of all time in the sequence.
It is funny. The bit where they're all looking...
Yes, watching her sunbathe is very funny.
Yeah.
So a bit more of Bev now. We have the sequence in the bathroom. So she hears voices from the sink. She sticks the tape measure down there. The hair comes up and attaches itself to her.
Yeah,
and drags
that's
her
so gross.
It's good, isn't it? Yeah. It's very effective because no one likes hair in a plug hole. No. It's just, especially if it's not your own. And then the blood flies up and covers the room.
So this is... This is, for me, this is up there with the fucking lifts opening and The Shining in terms of use of blood in a scene.
I tell you what it reminded me of. Have you watched the Evil Dead remake? The finale of that with the blood, where it's a complete shower storm of blood.
Oh, I can't remember it. Who directed that?
Fede Alvarez.
Fede! Is he texting you back yet?
No, but it's, I mean, he's busy.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got a lot of stuff on the go.
I know, and he's been consistently busy for 2 years. So, still waiting for you to get that text back.
But you're right, Alex. I think it's really visually effective. It looked amazing on the big screen. And here, as in the TV movie, the dad bursts in, you realise only he can see it. I think that's a really great reveal both times.
Yeah.
My only problem is when it comes to the cleanup, and you can imagine them cleaning up the blood in the first in 1990s, because it's like, there's a bit of blood there. Mm. You're not cleaning up that. There is no way soaked into the wallpaper.
No, but if The Cure, Six Different Ways is playing, you do it quite fast because that's a good song. Even though it's the Rules of Attraction song, it can't be the It song.
Yep.
And so they open up to each other about their visions. They finally realise that they're all seeing Pennywise. And then we have the Rock War, which was more exciting in the Cary Fukunaga version because it was 4th of July and it was a firework war.
Awesome.
And when you hear it described, it sounds like war.
Mm.
It's cute here, I suppose. Ben's figured out that, what's he figured out? He's figured out that six times the national average of people are disappearing in Derry. He figures out it's happening every 27 years. And they realise that everywhere it attacks is connected by the sewers, which meet at the well house.
Because we see the slideshow, don't we?
The carousel, yeah. Starts projecting those family pictures. And that is creepy when you close up on Georgie and his mum is Pennywise.
Yeah.
Oh, imagine looking at an old picture and your mum's Pennywise.
So this is the scene that catapulted me out
of my seat in the cinema. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which is when big, giant Pennywise emerges from the projector screen. I was like, it broke me at that moment. I was like, just sheer terror.
I think the, because we talked, you know, like we've got a bit of a thing with like old cassettes and listening to like white noise and stuff like that. I think the projector stuff is scary. Obviously, the jump scare is good, but once Pennywise is out of the frame kind of thing, it's less scary than seeing that medium messed around with.
I just, we had one of those projectors with slides in and they were a fucking nightmare. They all jamming every 5 minutes.
So they head to Nearbolt House where Bill delivers the speech that Vicky referenced, which I like. So I'm going to disagree with you.
He doesn't sound like a 12-year-old boy.
But he's talking about his brother, which I think he gets very emotional when he's talking about his brother. And equally, we've got to start seeing Bill transition into being the leader of this group.
Yes.
And so I like what he says. I like the way he says it. And I like the fact that he doesn't stutter once when he says it. So.
Do you think it's a shame that this is the second time we've seen the Nearbolt House and it should be the first time we've seen it?
Definitely. Yeah, yeah, because nothing really happens the first. Isn't it Eddie gets chased there by the blowjob leper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And nothing really happens, yeah.
Look, I said it on Monday. It's the problem here is where the Nearbolt House is. If you still feel like you're just round the corner from safety and regular streets and you're not isolated like you are down at the Barrens where there's that ominous building in the original version.
This is the first time that all the characters sort of interact with Pennywise, and Andy Muschietti said the day that he showed up on the stage, they fucking freaked out. Bill is like 7 foot high and I can't describe how scary he looks in person. He's a wiry man, crouching, making sounds, snotting, drooling, speaking in Swedish sometimes. He was terrifying.
Swedish is scary.
So it's a more of a 19th century clown, as we've said. What do you think of this interpretation?
I love it. I absolutely love it. I just, Tim Curry is scary, but is it, I mean, not to be like heretical about it, is it because it scared you, it scared me so much when I was 10 or 11, I couldn't watch past it. But to look at the way that they've done this creepy Victoriana thing just is scarier, especially because of the illuminated eyes. I don't know, it's and the cracking of the skin on the all of it is just much scarier.
And it's also the fact that he feels more childlike. Like Tim Curry as Pennywise feels like an adult.
Yes, definitely.
And this Pennywise feels like a child. He feels closer to
or
the
a doll,
kids.
Like a horrible doll.
But in terms of his sense of humour, he feels immature and it's like he's getting a gleeful sort of reaction. Like he has this gleeful reaction when he's terrifying them. And I think Bill Skarsgård said his thing is that he finds things hilarious as Pennywise that other people certainly wouldn't. And you really get that vibe from him.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they were going for. They wanted a childlike Pennywise. So that's the great thing. Go, you know, you can't beat Tim Curry at what Tim Curry does. Do something different. No, I quite agree. I think it's...
And the mouth opening up. I know it's an effect and it's not him, but the way it opens up, I was like, oh, that's cool.
So a bunch of things happen in the
Although
house.
Although it just reminded me of the...
Sharks.
No, the things that kill the vampires in Blade 2, where the sort of new mutant vampires, their faces open up in a similar way.
Yeah, lots of characters' faces open up.
That Predator?
Bunch of things happen in the house. Richie finds his own missing purse, poster. The BJ leper tells Eddie to take his pills. Richie gets surrounded by clowns. Just lots of things. There's lots of things happening. This is the moment where Pennywise says, tasty, tasty, beautiful fear. Again, a call back to what happens in Doctor Sleep, or a call forward with Rose the Hat, saying they taste better when they're frightened. Bev stabs Pennywise through the head and then he disappears through the well. And Eddie's arm gets broken and then they snap it back.
That's not how it works.
It's not how it works.
So have you dislocated your shoulder? No, I've broken my arm. Leave it alone.
Good. I thought that was just me.
No.
You can't snap
Poor Eddie. You can't unsnap.
No wonder his mum doesn't want him hanging out with them. They're idiots. And then they start fighting amongst themselves, which is what it wants. So they storm off in different directions and there's a montage of them returning to their own lives. Then we're into August. We get a bit more of Henry Bowers' home life.
This is where his dad embarrasses him in front of his friends, isn't it?
Yeah, he sort of shoots at him and says that fear makes paper men crumble.
Which is a terrible line. It really stuck out at the time where he goes, ain't nothing like a little fear to make a paper man crumble. Fold! Maybe a paper.
Yeah. Oh, I never thought of that. Yeah.
When have you ever seen paper crumble?
That's a good point.
Or a pie man crumble.
There you go. That would have been a lot better.
I'm trying to think of what crumbles.
Hi, man.
What crumbles? Apple crumbles.
Nothing like a little bit of fear to make a rhubarb crumble.
Plaster crumbles. A plaster man?
She should rewritten the whole line.
We can't make it work. Remove the line.
But yeah, Henry kills his dad on the orders of Pennywise. And we get some more. Henry kills his dad and then Bev gets grabbed by her dad.
Yeah.
And he's saying, creeps, we get two abusive dad in 2 minutes.
Exactly. Two dad deaths.
Too many abusive dads.
Although that is the point of the town. It's like the adults are evil or ignoring.
Yeah, but there's all different kinds of evil. Mm. Two abusive dads are the same evil.
Yeah.
Eddie finally stands up to his mum and the gang's back together. They head back to Nebolt House and they realise that if they stick together, they've got a chance at winning. Bev gets kidnapped. She sees Pennywise, the dancing clown stage, and above it, dead children suspended in air. They're floating.
Yeah, now we get it very literally. They all float down here, as I've displayed above. Take a look at that. So when I said that, they do float.
There's no mystery to it. They just float.
It wasn't just a terrifying expression. Look at them floating.
It's a good image, though. You can see where the budget's going in this film.
But it gets confusing, doesn't it? Because... can you resuscitate them? Sort of, maybe not. Is Georgie up there? Can you bring him back if you kiss him without his consent? Who knows?
Well, that's because Bev is hovering as
she's
well.
She's floating, so she's in the same state as Dave.
They all hover down here. They don't say that. She's floating, you're absolutely right. So she's floating as well, and obviously Bill brings her back with that terrible like Snow White fairy tale kiss, where it's like, yes, thank you very much, where it's just like, and it's like, oh, I'm back.
Oh, true love has resuscitated me.
I am now losing the rules of this system. Exactly what is going on here?
Because then Bev is brought back to life with a true love's kiss because it's Sleeping Beauty, but then Bill sees Georgie and it's like, well, why don't you just kiss him? But he doesn't. He kills him in the head. Which is fine, it works, but isn't that a bit of a gamble? Because you've just seen your friend be back, you'd be like, well, I'll try and kiss you first.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work, then I'll kill you.
Oh, yeah. when Georgie says, I want to go home, I miss you. Oh, I can't watch it.
Where's the fucking boat I made you? You lost.
I'm also not sure how much I like Bev becoming a damsel in distress.
No, it's B-A-D, bad. Yeah. Bad, bad, bad.
Yeah.
I thought we were done with B words. You can't have Bev, Bill, Ben, and bad.
It's bad.
That is wad.
Pennywise makes them an offer. He threatens to kill them all or will leave them all if they let him have Bill.
Mm.
I like that.
I liked that.
Yeah.
Because if it was either of you, take them.
Oh, 100,000.
Before we finish speaking.
100,000.
I'd be like, Vicky, you go first. Chris, run.
We see all their fears and then he nearly turns into a spider, but he doesn't quite. They start beating him with weapons and he turns into Bev's dad and she impales him. Bit like she stabbed him in the head like 20 minutes earlier. Mm. But we realise he couldn't kill Bev because she wasn't afraid and they aren't either. Now he's afraid because he's going to starve. And so his head disintegrates. He says the word fear and then falls down a well. And the kids start floating down. And Bill finds Georgie's yellow coat and he bursts into tears. I can't deal with this stuff with little brothers.
Did you read the bit of the Cary Fukunaga script that dealt with the orgy in a more grown-up and sophisticated way?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So she's like, guys, we need to focus or whatever. But she just takes cups them all by the face and they just have this sort of sweet moment and the light sort of revolves around the circle and it's like, we're all in it together kind of thing without the whisper of the unzipper.
See, I don't know if I like that. Yeah. She gives them all a woody and then walks on.
That would not make more magazine sex scene of the month.
You said in the book, it's like, Bill hears a whisper and he didn't know what it was. And then he heard a zip. So what was the whisper?
It's not explained.
Maybe her vagina?
Haunted.
Whispering Vagina, band name, called it. Ladies and gentlemen, we are Whispering Vagina.
That's really funny.
Hello, Cleveland.
Come on, we've got to get through this. September. They make the pact. They swear if it ever comes back, they'll come back to finish the job. They seal the deal with blood. They hold hands. The die's cast.
Now, that's bad.
Right, wait. So why you do... Okay, you go why you think it's bad.
Two super quick reasons. When they made It Chapter 1, they probably didn't know... Or they might have thought they might have an It Chapter 2. So in It Chapter 1, Richie is talking about AIDS using misinformation classic of the time. Like, I can't remember specifically what it is. It was like, you can catch AIDS, in quote marks, from sharing a glass of water, doing whatever, stuff that isn't true. No one corrects him. Now, that's appropriate for the time because people used to talk like that. But if you're not going to make an It Chapter 2 and then correct some of this stuff, especially using the F word for gay people, then it's irresponsible to do that and just leave it hanging. And then second of all, this blood pact thing is not a good idea. And like, if your kids are doing that, it's just not a responsible thing to do.
That's the thing. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, you fast forward from what, the 50s and the 1990 version to the 80s. This is 1988.
Yeah.
And no kid is like, no matter how much you're like, we should do a blood pact. You're like, do you know what? I saw something on the news. So let's just shake hands. Yeah. I just don't think you are going to be like making blood packs at that age.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, and it's quite serious.
I did it all the time. It stayed in my hand.
But you were a weird child. We've established that. You were just pulling clots out of your nose and going, that's yours. Blood packed.
Valentine, you eat that.
Valentine clot.
Then we're together.
Bev and Bill.
Can't get this card open. What?
Bev and Bill kiss and we're taking a break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Detective Abberline.
Hearing you, Abberline. Go ahead.
We've got the body of a male on Durwood Street, Whitechapel, just behind the tube. A Mark Allen Nichols. His throat has been cut, a stab wound below his shoulder blade, and,
Continue, please, Detective.
Yeah, she's cut off his knob and put his bollocks in the recycling bins.
Stack presents a thrilling new audio fiction.
She cut his throat, unbollocked the guy, and decocked him for good measure.
The body of a man brutally murdered in Whitechapel was discovered this morning.
That was Jackie's way. Evil, bloodthirsty, sexually explicit, and just, yeah, just bloody horrible, really. Step into the scene. Me, yours truly, moi, that's, me, lead detective, Freddie Abberline of Scotland Yard.
There is a man next to us who has been brutally murdered and dismembered.
We'll go and find his member then. Jesus Christ. Oh, but we've kept his AirPods in, I see. What's he listening to? Death metal? Zombie Nation?
Follow me as I hunt the most vicious serial killer known to man.
Good Lord, she stuffed his eye sockets with his own bollocks.
Jackie the Ripper. The infamous Whitechapel murders. Retold. By the makers of The Offensive. Available now on all podcast platforms.
Sorry, Sally, I got your shoes. Ah, oh, it's my Wagamama from earlier. Let's have a closer look.
Looks like noodles.
No, him.
Jackie the Ripper. Hold on to your bollocks.
Wow, all before the break. Well done.
And we're back with chapter two. It did have a pretty...
And I changed my t-shirt in the middle of it, so that's not on Chris, that's on me.
Right, okay. Mm.
Chapter two.
I just want him to know that his timekeeping has been impeccable and I fucked it up.
That's true.
I've been thinking about this, like, the Dune, what's happened with Dune at the moment, in that they did literally make this first film without knowing if they'd get a second film. It's happening with Dune at the moment, and it happened with it here, which is remarkable, because normally, in this day and age in Hollywood, they take the bet, and they make both films back-to-back. So I just thought that was interesting. We'll get to why it makes this film weird later on.
It's more interesting here, because this was only $35 million. So you'd imagine they'd go, well, it's going to do that. And so we can sign up for that. I mean, I think Dune is obviously a different kettle of fish, because what is that, $250 million or something? So,
but it messes something that we're going to get to in a bit. Anyway, before we crack into the film, I just want to say, in an interview in July 2017, the child actors from the first film were asked which actors they would choose to play them in the sequel. Sophia Lillis chose Jessica Chastain, and Finn Wolfhard chose Bill Hader.
Really?
Both of which happened.
For real. Like, hi, sorry, Finn, just if you could have a read of that before the interview. It says Bill Hader.
I mean, Will's asked us to, and it's
awkward. You would like that to be true, but the other young actors didn't say the people they ended up with. So would you like to know who they wanted to play?
Yeah.
So Bill wanted Christian Bale. He ended up with James McAvoy.
Great.
Eddie wanted Jake Gyllenhaal. He ended up with James Ransom. Ben wanted Chris Pratt and ended up with Jay Ryan. Stan wanted Joseph Gordon-Levitt, ended up with someone called Andy Bean. And Mike wanted Chadwick Boseman and ended up with Isaiah Mustafa. So, yeah, that would have been a really good cast they picked.
Wow, hell of a cast.
Pricey.
Yeah.
Chris Pratt would have been a very good Ben. I think Ben is miscast in both movies. Much as I like John Ritter.
We have to get onto Ben in this.
Sure, and we will.
It's laughable.
Okay. So it starts September 1989. Like the Karate Kid films, we kick off with the end of the last movie.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you've got...
Remember this?
Bev is lying, though. She lies to Stan. I found that quite... I mean, you sort of... I guess you kind of understand why, but she's like, you were definitely there and fucking taller or something. You're not dead. Anyway, guys, let me tell you about the rest of you. It's really weird.
And then we're 27 years later and we've got this cold open at the fairground. This horrific scene where a gay couple become the victim of a hate crime, which I think is sort of... underlining the fact that something horrible is being unlocked in the townspeople.
I found this opening quite strange when I watched it the first time.
I found it confusing because the man that gets thrown into the river or his partner has an inhaler. So I was like, oh, it's Eddie.
It's very specific.
Yeah.
It's strange. It's in the book.
Yes, it is
in the book. Although in the book, which doesn't happen in the film, which seems strange, is that the perpetrators, the guys who do kill him and throw him off the bridge, are arrested. They are convicted of his murder. And they don't bother to sort of close that in the book. So it's sort of in the film, rather. Which works in the film because it's like the police are ineffective because they're all polluted by Derry's evil. Mm. But Stephen King in the book still felt the need to sort of at least, close that circle, which is interesting. Yeah.
But we talk about him returning to themes. Obviously, I've been banging on about it this month. But I feel like it's similar. Overlook Hotel unlocks something terrible in Jack. Pet Sematary unlocks something terrible in Jed. And now we've got this town, Pennywise, unlocking something terrible in the townspeople. Same themes over and over again. Mm. Right, Mike's investigating and he starts making some calls. Bill is working on a movie called Attic Room at the Warner Brothers lot for director Peter Bogdanovich. Very strange.
Who's awesome, by the way.
I don't know. I feel like it's a cameo that just completely takes me out of the movie. I guess a lot of people, certainly, I don't know, I'm going to be snobby. The youngsters maybe don't know who Peter Bogdanovich is and wouldn't recognise him, but it's a strange old cameo.
Oh, on the subject of Easter eggs, just because I think if we don't mention it, people will go, you know, mention that. On 1990s episode, Bill has written a book called The Glowing.
Yes.
Which was obviously The Shining. Sorry.
Bogdanovich, though, thinks the ending of his book is terrible. We're going to come back to that.
Well, no, because they don't kill the shit out of that joke, do they? That never gets a mention again.
But I think it works better later. Eddie's a risk assessor, married to a woman just like his mum. He even calls her mum. And I hadn't realised this. It's the same actress playing both his mum and the wife.
Isn't that amazing?
Really cool. Ben, he's lost some weight. He's speaking via Zoom. He's a handsome, successful architect. And what I love is the person who you're first introduced in that scene, who you think is Ben, is Brandon Crane, who portrayed Ben in the 1990 version.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really clever use of cameo.
Ben is too hot. Like, it's like, he's ridiculous. Jay Ryan is a very, very attractive man. Now, I only say that because I guess in both versions, but it was only until I saw this version that, like, it suddenly struck me. Bev, like, suddenly finds out that it was actually Ben who wrote this poem. Would it not be amazing that he looks still like a bit of a chunkier guy? He hasn't worked out that much, just a regular looking bloke. But the fact that he wrote this poem for her and she didn't realize it was him, and she sort of carried that with her all this time, and she goes, oh my God. And then they fall in love, as opposed to a man who was like chiseled by a pervert.
That's the thing, because if he's like, I didn't write the poem, she's like, I don't give a shit at this point. No, have you seen you?
You're absolutely right. Although I do think facially he does look quite a bit like the young Ben. I can actually see the similarity. My issue is I just think he's pretty bland in this version.
Mm.
I don't think he brings much to the part. So we get the Stan suicide scene, but this time it's intercut with them sealing their deal with blood. So there's razor blade and blood with the razor. With
it's not as effective here.
No.
I didn't think so. I mean, I'm struggling to remember it even now.
Bev receives the call, rather, and I felt like this was shot and played very similar to Sleeping with the Enemy that we watched recently.
Yeah.
He plays his part a bit like Patrick Bergin in that film. That's all I've got to say on that. There's all the stuff with Henry Bowers, which is one of the many things that I think takes us down a path that we don't need to spend as much time on as we do.
Yeah, I agree.
He's in a psychiatric hospital. Patrick Hoxsetter appears, gives him a knife. He stabs his way out of hospital. Let's get to the Chinese restaurant where they all seem happy. They're having a go at each other. They're having a laugh. They don't remember forgetting each other, which I wouldn't buy into until I started doing this podcast. And after we record an episode, I can't remember anything that I've said. People tweet us about stuff when the show goes live. I can't remember anything. Do you have this where I blank as soon as I leave this room?
Yeah.
It's a strange thing.
I wish I could.
It's a gift.
Therapy one day.
Cut that bit. You changed T-shirt.
I think he liked it.
Yeah, he did really. Yeah. Did,
yeah. We get the cookie. Oh. He's so hairless, like a baby. Sorry, Alex just exposed himself to me.
Just the torso. Just the torso.
Although he is hairless there too, of course.
That's a look, though.
There's an H carved in your stomach. We get
and a
the
V and a C.
We get cookie monsters, as I'm going to call them. These freaky little computer generated monsters.
I don't like them as much as the other ones.
No, they don't feel real. They don't look real.
But so many of the monsters don't in this. They just feel really entertaining. Like you'd be like, oh wow, cool. Look at that.
It's a drum we've banged a million times, but you cannot beat great in-camera practical effects.
Well, you need a combination. And it feels too many times with the CG monsters here. They're going through the motions every 5 minutes, we've got to have one of these jump out, run around, do something.
Yeah.
There's a more frightening scene at a baseball game. A firefly lures a little girl to an underneath the bleachers where Pennywise waits. He offers to blow the birthmark off her face and then bites off her head.
So this is interesting because there's a moment here which is really, really good where she first goes under the bleachers and goes up to him and he's like, hello, little girl. Da, da, da. And she goes, fuck this.
Yeah.
You're clearly a scary person and it's the 21st century and I know full well that I've seen enough movies that you're a fuck up and I'm off.
What we wanted Georgie to do.
Right.
Yeah.
But then all he does is goes, no one will play with the clown anymore. And she's like, oh, actually, because it's a movie, sure, I'll come over and die.
Yeah, but I thought he connects with her on her level over her birthmark. Like, I think he's appealing to her sympathy and her sweetness. That's what makes it so upsetting.
I think the switch is too dramatic from a very smart kid to suddenly being convinced because he'll blow away her birthmark.
It reminded me of that Dr. Sleep scene of the kid getting tortured to death that Alex enjoyed so much.
Mm. That's a great scene.
But at least they didn't linger on it here, so that's probably why you're annoyed. We didn't get 10 minutes of watching her, the life leave her little body.
Yeah, and then it keeps cutting back to the body and no one's moved it. They've closed
and mom's just gone.
They've closed the bleachers and it's now exposed, but people are just sort of like moving it out of the way.
If I was just watching the films, I think I'd find it hard to get my head around the concept of the deadlights.
Yes.
I don't think it's brilliantly explained. And then we get, in addition to that, we've got Eddie. We find that he's been Mike's been getting help from a Native American holy man. He's been drinking their sacred drugs, having visions. He microdoses Bill.
That is bananas, by the way. Who does that to their friend? That's not all right.
I wish you'd do it to
you. You enjoy this episode?
And we see the past where it arrives and how it appeared to others and show how to stop it.
But right. Let's get into this.
The Ritual of Chud.
Ritual of Chud, which is in the book.
It is in the book.
Okay, the Ritual of Chud. But what isn't in the book is it arriving in a comet. Mm-hmm. That is something that Gary Dobman has chosen to add to this, the idea of it being an alien from outer space. We even get to see where the comet landed at the end. Mm-hmm. Fine. Okay. You want to sort of go, I'm losing the turtle and I'm adding an alien. But then we've got this whole bit where Bev visits Mrs. Kirsch's house. And now Mrs. Kirsch is the daughter of a man who looks exactly like Pennywise, played by Bill Skarsgård, who she then tells the story of having arrived in this town with $14. Mm-hmm. And we get a cut scene later where he's sitting, a hallucination where he's sitting and he's putting the makeup on. Mm-hmm. It's like if by the end of how long is it? So over 5 hours of watching cinema, I am confused as to whether or not Pennywise was this man who came to town or an alien from a comet. Mm. Something has gone wrong with your storytelling.
I agree. I mean, apart from a prequel, I would like to see, which is Bill Skarsgård without much makeup on being that person.
Eating a baby?
No, I don't. Well, I mean, if it's there, it's there. But if you don't see the actual eating of the baby and you see the reaction shot, that's better. But also,
oh, you want to see it.
What is it good?
Just like his jaw distending and like just head clean off.
Whoa. But also, once you say alien, I like alien films and I'm scared of aliens when I'm in space. But if it's not the Earth, if there's something wrong with the Earth that you've got, it's less scary to be like, oh, it just came in from outer space and it could fuck off to outer space if it wanted to, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas when it's in the soil, because it's always been here, it predates everything kind of thing. It's much scarier to me.
Yeah, it's just sort of this weird thing. And it's like if it arrived in a comet, didn't even arrive in a spaceship. So it is kind of stuck here. So it's not like here through choice. It's not an eater of worlds. Yeah. It's an eater of world singular, this one.
Yeah, well, by accident.
Yeah, because it accidentally landed here. It's sort of, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense as opposed to this transdimensional being that has chosen to be here because it's a great place to feast.
Yeah.
And that was done better in the film Killer Clowns from Outer Space anyway.
Right.
So we get a bit of a flashback of the kids fighting their clubhouse. I love there's a really good Texas switch here where the old Ben falls into a hole and young Ben gets up. Mm-hmm. But this is where the issue comes in terms of why they didn't shoot it back to back, because they've had to de-age and dub the kids here.
Right.
And I think it plays really strange. I mean, I had to check because there was just something off about the way they looked.
Okay,
and the way they spoke.
But
okay, yeah, because they'd grown 2 years, and at that age, that's quite a big change.
See,
so you're looking at pretty CG characters in that sequence.
Okay,
but if you didn't notice
I didn't notice.
Oh wow. Okay, I feel bad bringing it up. It weirded me out.
Don't. It just makes you more observant than Victoria and I,
which is true. Mm-hmm.
Good at my job.
Learn.
Didn't need to take.
I didn't
that
say
far.
That. No, we learned that.
You know, take a compliment, right? Take a fucking compliment.
Don't turn something nice into something horrible all the time.
Oh, I'm the best. So we learned that the Ritual of Chud requires.
Why did you say that like you were farting at the same time? I'm the best. Or something else.
Exactly. Ritual of Chud requires some sacrifice, and it requires them to dig up their past piece by piece. Alex, I know you, Vicky, even I know you had an issue with this.
That is the Horcruxes.
Right,
from Harry
was it you who said this?
It was. Yeah. That's why I passed it straight to Vicky before you could jump in and claim it as your own.
I wasn't going to claim it as my own, but I was quite annoyed because I wouldn't have picked up on it. And then when you said that last week at the pub and I watched it after that and I was like, oh my God, it is fucking Horcrux finding. And they don't even bother to show everyone finding their own individually.
No.
They go, we'll do a couple and then we'll reveal like Mike holding a rock at the end.
He's at
like,
the end.
By the way, I had this rock, Bev, from ages ago. So yeah, while you were off looking for yours, I just add mine.
But it adds,
I remember to bring it, even though I don't remember anything.
It adds
weird.
A good 40 minutes to the runtime, which is the real issue here. So yeah, they're off on their artifacts. Alex, you've mentioned Beverly going to that home. I was going to talk about it. Is it worth it? I think we've done it, maybe.
It'd be worth it if we were learning about the history of Pennywise.
Yeah.
If he was this guy who came to this town, if that was like, this is interesting. And so he was the first person to stumble into this lair and like the alien, then like it possessed him. So that was the first physical form it decided to take. And he was the clown at the circus. And that's how it came about. Great. I'm on board with this. This is interesting. But it's not. He's an alien as well.
And we get that one moment as well where we see Bill Skarsgård out of makeup, applying the makeup and then using blood for the red. And it's a really effective scene, but I don't, what's the point? Mm.
There is a lot of this movie that is, you hate to say it, but it's just there because it's like, that'll be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it, you know, the giant Paul Bunyan chasing Bill, it's in the book, but, and it looks cool, but like, this is the longest horror film that's ever gone on general release.
It is weird.
And it did not need to be this long.
Yeah.
It's weird that, I don't know whether, because it is, like you say, the longest, whether anyone's ever done that experiment before. There are only so many scares that you can put in before you're like, actually, I'm done.
But I've always felt that, you know, I love Judd Apatow's films, but he does get criticised for them being too long. And I think 2 1/4 to 2 hours, 20 minutes, I think you've only got a certain amount of laughs in you before you're just a bit exhausted of laughing. And that's why comedies work at 90 minutes. And I feel the same about horror.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a famous thing about comedies where it is sort of any more than 90 minutes and you're pushing it. But I'd never really thought about that until now about horror. But I think you're right.
And we always talk about similarities with horror and comedy, yeah. Like the setup and payoff.
I don't even think that lumberjack scene is that good.
No. It's not scary.
It's not scary. It's sort
it's
of
just,
kind
you'd be like,
funny.
Wow, okay, cool. Mm.
Bill tries to buy a bike from Stephen King, who tells him off for swearing and doesn't like his ending.
He's quite
and
good.
This is where I like it, because Stephen King is constantly criticised for his endings. Mm. So it's quite funny to him almost take the piss out of himself.
For one time, and he's not by everybody throughout the whole film constantly.
Not. Yeah, I'll do it on my terms. He's not a bad actor in this, though.
No, he's not.
It's fine. Eddie heads to the pharmacy. I'm only bringing up stuff that's interesting now because there's just so much happens. Mm. Andy Muschietti, did you spot him in the background?
I did not.
Maybe I don't need to spot him because I'd met him. But
was he when you met him?
Yeah, top bloke. Really liked him.
Yeah.
Very nice.
I think he seems good.
Yeah, he seems cool. But this sequence flashes into a basement full of broken surgical tools where his mum's tied up by the BJ leper, and in the present he strangles as black goo streams into his face. It's these scenes that don't add anything. It's just like, oh, this will be a little bit of a jump scare, and it doesn't, it just doesn't progress things.
Two things. BJ Leper, band name, called it. We are BJ Leper. Hello, Cleveland. Also, the bit where the black gunk sprays into his face. Call me Angel in the morning, Angel. That ridiculous musical cue at that point, I was like, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's great. But where has that come from?
Exactly. You know, we followed up with Bill going to that summer festival and following that kid into the Hall of Mirrors. And Pennywise imprisons the kid and he's licking the glass with his big tongue and he headbutts it. And it's a great image. But like, let's get on with this now. I feel like it's all filler.
Not so much that. What's bothering you is that you know, we bang on about structure. If you lifted that scare and put it 20 minutes earlier, it makes no difference to the narrative. If you put it 20 minutes later, it makes no difference to the narrative. They do it with the kids as well. When the kids get into the Niebuhr house, you're just scaring them a bit, but it doesn't push the narrative on necessarily.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating. I also think the 1991 does it a bit as well, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
It's just too much. It's like I think this kid in the Hall of Mirrors thing is a real fail as well, because this isn't just thrown in there like, oh, this will be cool, a scene in a Hall of Mirrors. This is meant to be something we are invested in emotionally, because Bill is like trying to save this kid. He doesn't want the same thing to happen to Georgie. And you should be like, oh my God, at that moment. Mm. And you're not, you're just like, whatever. Huh, that's fucking cool.
Another death.
A lot of blood.
You were just annoyed it wasn't dragged out for longer because it was a kid.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been better. But again, all the deaths are a little bit short.
It's like you said about, what's the film we watched where they go to, is it Sleeping with the Enemy, where they go to the fairground and you think the climax is going to happen in the fairground and then they just go home.
A hallway. So they head to Niebolt House again to have a lot of the same things or similar kind of things to happen that we saw in chapter one.
With one added very strange decision.
Is this the homage to The Thing?
What the fuck is that doing there?
So young Stan appears in a fridge, his head falls off, he rolls, starts talking, turns into a spider, and Richie, quoting The Thing, says,
You've got to be fucking kidding me. You've got to be fucking kidding me, yeah. I was just like, oh, man, I'd love to watch The Thing again. But that's what moments like that do, when it reminds you of a great moment in a great film and it takes you out of this movie.
Yeah. And they realise that Pennywise's lair from the first film was nothing, because they find these vast caves under Derry that have been there for a billion years.
But that's good, because like, thank God they go somewhere else, because so far you've been everywhere you've already been.
Yeah.
And now we get to go down the hatch.
It becomes quite Lovecraftian now.
Yeah. Do you think it's kind of weird that a lot of the flashbacks that they have in, I couldn't decide whether it worked or it didn't, but it felt like that a lot of the flashbacks the adults have to their childhood are stuff that wasn't in the first film. It feels like some of these flashbacks should go back to things that we'd sort of seen in the first film and like be maybe told from a different angle or something else was going on. It's like you're having your cake and eating it. You're having the adult story, but then you're adding more kid stuff that really belonged in the first movie.
Yeah.
We get some stuff with the artifacts now. I was going to read out the artifacts, but
no,
you don't really care, do you?
Yeah,
okay.
I do.
Bill is Georgie's boat. Eddie's is the inhaler.
Yeah, right.
Bev's the poem she wished she'd held on to.
Mm-hmm.
Bill's is the page from the yearbook only one person signed. Sorry, that's Ben. Mm. Ben's at the yearbook page. Richie's is a token from the cinema.
No.
Literal token.
Absolutely not.
No. Mike's is the rock that Bev hit Bowers
not
with.
Not even Mike's not own my, thing.
I've written that in capitals. That's not Mike's.
Unbelievable.
If we both are angry about that, like surely when they're writing it, they're like, we've got to find something for Mike that actually belongs to him.
What's yours, Mike? Yeah, it's actually yours, Bev. It's your
shit,
rock.
It's yours.
Do you want to swap? I can do the rock and you can do my poem.
Is the poem I wish I kept for you.
And Stan's is a blooming shower cap that they had to write that new scene underground so they want to wear the shower cap.
Oh, God, yeah, sorry.
Nothing,
yeah,
nothing. So the point
God,
is...
the clubhouse scene, that was waste.
That's the de-aged one I was talking about.
Right, sorry. Yeah.
Okay. So the ritual of Chud. They've done the union, they do the tokens, the final step is the flames going out and the ceiling turning into the inside of the mouth and the deadlights descending and they don't look, we're doing Raise the Lost Ark now, we're going to put on music to really like Raise the Lost Ark, don't look. I wish I was watching Raise the Lost Ark. And Pennywise then appears and claims it's all a gazebo placebo.
Uh-huh. It's Bill, James McAvoy goes, Mike, did you lie to us? Yeah. And he's like... Well,
kind of.
Yeah. So what happened was they did this once before,
and they all died.
Everyone died. But don't worry, it's because they didn't really want it to go, or they didn't believe it.
They were scared. Yeah.
It is because it corrects.
Well, now I'm scared because it didn't fucking work.
Because at first, Mike's like, oh, it was Native Americans. They could do it, but they just moved somewhere else. And it's like, well, why would they not just do it? Like, it's their thing. They can do it. And then he's like, yeah, so take these drugs. Oh, wait, sorry. Are you fucked now? All right, fine. Now you can see. And then it's like, oh, yeah, no, they did do it, but they all couldn't do it. The Native Americans couldn't do it.
And now I wish I was right in the end here, but there's so much more because the Pennywise turns into this clown spider. They get split up again. They get split up
They're
so many times in this
together.
Film.
They're very bad at
and
that.
And they end up in front of doors again, just like they did in the last film.
Funny, though. It's the dog joke.
The Pomeranian. The Pomeranian is a good callback, but it's not good enough for an extra 50 minutes in front of doors and Bill in the basement with Georgie and Bev and Ben trying to get to each other. And
so, first of all, weird that Henry Bowers goes, here's Johnny. Strange. Why are you referencing The Shining? Yes. What's the point in that? The dog joke is a great joke. It feels a little bit like the rabbit out of the hat in the Twilight Zone movie. The problem is at this point, we are in life and death stakes. This is the finale now. Yeah. You know, I think already as Mike's injured, Eddie even dead at this
point? He's not dead yet.
He's not dead yet. But shit is going down. You do not take a breath to go, this is kind of a funny gag, so we're going to do it here.
And what you also don't do is Bill has had to shoot Georgie in the head not long ago. Now he's got to drown Georgie.
Mm.
It's literal overkill.
Mm.
Don't have the same character kill the same character twice. It doesn't mean anything on this occasion.
It is quite a statistic. How many times have you killed the same brother? Twice. I've killed my one brother twice over.
Three times if you think about the responsibility with the toy ball.
Bev realises the truth about the poem and Ben tells her he loves her. And
she's like, brilliant because you're fit now. So awesome.
Eddie gets speared. There's something about living things abiding by the shape they inhabit.
Stupid.
You know, I kind of vaguely know what they're talking about, but it's so offhandedly thrown away that it's...
I mean, I've told you this before. The biggest problem I have with this climax is the fact that Spider Pennywise looks exactly like Bug Turbo from Wreck-It Ralph at the end. Where Turbo is infected with the bug energy and it's Turbo's big clown head on top of the spider body. And I watch and I go, but it's just the same thing.
Yeah.
Did you like it when he shrunk down to become Baby Wise?
So stupid. Because we talk about this a lot. If you've got a monster, you don't want to make it look weak. You can kill it and it goes away, or whatever. But don't make it look like weak, like a literal baby.
Yeah, it reminded me of Deadpool 2 when he turns into a little.
Yeah,
kid. But this is his death scene though.
Yeah.
No, I'm a fan. I like the, because the whole thing is he's been this,
but also,
incredibly powerful. This is his death scene. It's not you are weakening the monster at this point because he's dying. It's his last hurrah. So you kind of want to see this all-powerful, omnipresent force that has infected this town reduced to this snivelling little thing on the ground going, I liked it.
The problem is, which again, you know, we were talking about the 90 miniseries and how it had to really focus on the friendship, and it's quite, I think, you know, but I'm quite cold, it's quite mawkish. Mm. So that is like times 1 billion here, where they're like, but wait, you can make someone feel small in other ways. So Pennywise, yeah, first of all, would have fucking buckets of self-esteem because everything he wants, he gets. Everything he does goes well. So they're like, you're rubbish. And he's like, not rubbish. Yeah. That's ridiculous. They chide a clown to death.
That's fine. I agree with that. I absolutely agree. The climax is like, meh. But like in both movies, it's meh. But I do like the sort of the withered, like, remains of Pennywise begging for his life and them not giving it to him. I thought that was good.
Okay.
Mike pulls out his heart. They all squeeze. The light goes out in his eyes. He breathes his last breath and his body disintegrates. But we're far from done. Eddie dies. They've got to get out of the house before it disappears into the ground. They jump off the cliff into the water. They remember Eddie. That made me sad. This is the first time Richie doesn't joke in the film.
I cried my eyes out.
Yeah, it's quite emotional.
I cried and cried and cried because I didn't see it come in, because all their bants, I just didn't see it. And then when Eddie died and Richie was, I was like, oh, fuck, he loved him. And then when he did love him, so.
Okay.
Because I just didn't see it come in. Which is good. I liked it.
So you knew Eddie was going to die.
Well, yeah, right. But I didn't, because obviously,
because you'd watched the same movie.
Well, yeah, but then the other one, he's in a movie with his friend Eddie, and that's their connection.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Okay.
Whereas this is like, I loved you, and now you're gone, and I never told. Oh, and then he's just, you know, really sobbing.
Come on, I'm nearly there. So bed and bev kiss. The hand scars have healed.
He minimizes my emotions all the time.
I can see.
I know.
Come on. I think that is your new catchphrase. It is. It's come on. Come on, get it done. Nearly there.
I feel like we've been here forever talking about the same fucking thing. Their scars have healed on their hands because nothing lasts forever. We flash back to them bickering while pushing their bikes. Very strange things. They're remembering it all this time. They're not forgetting, but they're all finally moving on. They all receive a letter from Stan explaining why he killed himself, and his film's still bloody going. He said he was too scared, so he took himself off the board.
I think that's it's unearned sentimentality about Stan there, I don't think.
Oh, I liked it.
Oh, I didn't.
I thought to give him a bit more agency. I like that.
No, I like it.
We see that Richie loved Eddie because
on Monday, it's the fear that Stan is blinded by the fear. Sure, it's not like, right. I'm absolutely terrified, but not so terrified that I can't just write 7 letters.
Ben and Bev are on a boat.
Oh, yeah.
And like everything else in this chapter, we get 2 rather than 1 concluding quotes. Thing about being a loser is you don't have anything to lose, and we're losers and we always will be.
Pick one.
Pick one!
Everybody's got something to lose. That's ridiculous.
It Chapter 1 cost $35 million and made $700 million.
It didn't.
Oh, did you not know?
No, I didn't know the number. Yeah. It did not.
Ridiculous.
Fucking and hell.
It was like, this is a really interesting thing we haven't talked about, which is, its
Why?
Trailer, when its trailer landed on YouTube, overnight it became the most watched movie trailer in the history of movie trailers on YouTube. And like, I just have no idea why. And the only thing I can think, because I don't think the book is that revered, is the fact that that Tim Curry version has entered popular culture so much that the idea of a new It trailer meant it just exploded overnight.
Yeah.
And Chapter 2 cost $79 million and made $470 million, okay, which looks like nothing in comparison, and it's such a big hit. And It Chapter 1 is the most successful horror film of all time.
Wowzers.
Let's do the bits.
One other thing, Pennywise's demise, he gets a mention in Stephen King's Dreamcatcher, right. Which we have talked about a lot considering we haven't covered it on this.
And we will talk about it again one day.
Oh my God, we will. Someone tries to put, Mr. Grey tries to put a worm in Derry's water using a stamp pipe, but it's not there. In its place is a statue of children with a plaque underneath dedicated to the victims of the 1985 flood, which is when Derry gets washed away in the book, and of it. The plaque has been vandalised with graffiti that reads, Pennywise lives. I'd like him to come back.
Yeah, of course.
Vicky, what's your favourite scene?
Just hang on a minute because my iPad is running out of battery.
Alex, so
just
what's your favourite scene?
Thank you.
Great, thanks. I'll step in. save the day. Like that.
It's just a battery issue.
His iPad won't run out.
No.
Paper.
Tree.
Someone's got a printer.
After tree. Right, George's death. Again, it's without a doubt the most effective scene in this movie. I can still done it right now. Close my eyes. Armless child crawling along the tarmac and being reached for by an extending clown hand. Amazing.
I'm going to jump in and say Georgie's death for me. Yeah. Two for two.
I don't know why I need my notes. It's Georgie in the storm drain.
Wow. So we all picked the same scene both times.
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
It is incredible that they've done it two different ways as well.
Yeah.
In the first movie, they tell you what happened rather than show his arm being ripped off. In this one, they show it. And yet both work. Both are equally effective. And I think that is when you think it... I think you think more that moment than any other.
That's why we picked it. Vicky, MVW.
Bill Skarsgård, obviously. Just weird, unsettling, big-eyed, childlike. Or Bill Hader for making me cry. James McAvoy for continuing to be fit as fuck. But actually, Bill Skarsgård.
So most valuable whatevers.
Yeah, Bill Skarsgård.
Alex, most valuable whatever.
Bill Skarsgård.
Okay.
Yeah, genuinely, because I don't think you'll find anywhere people talking about how his performance is a poor Tim Curry or that they miss Tim Curry, yeah. Which I think is absolutely amazing considering how much we love Tim Curry in the original, to then have this and not at any point ever go... Yeah, it's not Tim Curry, though. And he's made it his own. Mm-hmm. And he's done it in a very different way. So Bill Skarsgård.
Okay, I'm not picking him.
Whoa.
Ah, boring.
Bucking the trend. I'm going for Sophia Lillis.
She's very good.
Yeah.
She's so good.
No matter what you think of her character, I just think she brings a lot to that role. Just, it's multi-layered, it's nuanced, she's likable, she's tough. Some horrible scenes she has to shoot. And
she's
I just think
so
she's
good,
brilliant.
Yeah,
it's like watching a movie star just appear on screen.
Definitely.
To the point that I think Jessica Chastain had to really be on point to play her as an older character. Yeah.
It sounds like you're adding another most valuable one.
Wow, yeah, maybe.
She is great, though.
And if you changed anything, what would it be, Vicky?
Just two small things. When Ben is trapped in the locker, he's going to get his bit of paper and he's having a memory and New Kids on the Block poster is there and you can see Danny from New Kids on the Block. I think Danny should come to life and try and bite him, so I think that would be fun.
Oh my God, I just came.
Hell.
Come on.
All right, come on.
I was a blockhead.
And then the last thing is, it's a really small thing. When they do the quarry dip as adults, they should take their clothes off to show that they've got it's not sexual, it's the innocence of youth. They can strip in front of each other and it's not a big sexy thing like they did when they were kids. Mm. When they jump into a quarry fully clothed, it's like, oh, you're embarrassed by yourselves, which is natural for adults, but they're meant to have this connection that runs much deeper than that.
Yeah, also, just very quickly, Quarry Dip, band name.
Oh,
called
God.
It.
Alex, come on.
I've done mine, so you'll be pleased to hear. It's the fact that in over 5 hours of movie watching, I'm confused about the origins of it versus Pennywise the Clown, the guy who became Pennywise the Clown, the Bill Skarsgård character putting on the makeup, the comet from outer space. I want to know. I'm happy with you leaving it vague. Don't tell me everything, but don't have two completely conflicting ideas that seem to work against each other.
I'm going to do a couple of changes that are out there in the world. They're not my personal ones, but people have talked about them. I think they're interesting.
Lately.
No, I've got one. I've got one on my own.
Okay.
But I just thought these ones we should mention. Everyone was hoping when it was announced that it would be set in the 80s that rather than do 50s movie monsters, they'd do 80s movie monsters. And I think it would have been fun to see Jason Freddy showing up in this movie, it's particularly as Warner Brothers own the rights to Freddy.
I don't know.
It's just one direction they could have gone in.
But no, because if you've got Pennywise and Freddy Krueger...
Freddy's very similar to Pennywise.
And it also, you know, Pennywise is meant to be the big scary... the big bad, and Freddy is fucking terrifying, so yeah.
It's just a fun bit of speculation, Alex. Don't get angry.
Okay.
Also, As Alex mentioned, in the book, Pennywise at the end lays eggs. We realise Pennywise is female, cast a woman. As good as Bill Skarsgård was, it would have been really interesting to have female
Tilda
Pennywise.
Swinton, yeah.
Not, I've written down not Tilda Swinton. Too bloody scary.
But where did your fear of Tilda Swinton come from?
The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
Everything.
Okay, fine.
She's a little bit frightening.
Yep.
I like her.
All right.
No, my changes don't make chapter two. And we're done.
Wow.
That's a big, big swing.
Done.
You do need chapter two. Because, all right, fine.
Let's see how the verdict goes.
Well, let's do that right now then. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth!
So, my choices. Who's going to go first? I'm going to go with Tim Curry. Chris, you go first.
Okay, we've got two very different interpretations, largely due to the budget and the rating. And I think they both have their strengths and weaknesses. We've gone into them. But I'm going with the new films, mainly because of broadcast standards and practices, because the TV movie is effective, but it isn't it as much. So much has to be implied. In the TV movie, we hear the horror of George's death and it works, but in the new one, we see it and it really works. So in spite of my dislike for chapter two, I think chapter one is great. And when combined, they are a more accurate reflection of Stephen King's book, the new ones.
So that is one vote for It, chapters one and two. Remember, they are one combined movie in this week's show. So Victoria.
I did agonise over this and I might change my mind. All right, so I think that I found this really hard because my expectations for the TV series were sky high because it scared me to death. And obviously it can't really deliver on that because of the constraints of TV. So one and two obviously looks better, but so they should, you know, all that time and it's a feature and all the rest of it. Both of them suffer massively from not building the dread and the scares and the narrative. In both of them, you can move the scenes around with no impact. And it is hard to write. But by 2017, you should have got it better because you've seen someone try it and fail a little bit. So you should do a better job. So then you go back to like Curry versus Skarsgård, I think a bit, because they sort of carry the films in their own different way. But Curry's carrying the full miniseries, whereas at least with the movies, despite the absolutely preposterous length, they do have other stuff going for them. Whereas I do think, if I'm honest, the 1990 miniseries doesn't have much else going for it apart from Tim Curry. In the movies, the love triangle stuff is better. The Eddie and Richie thing I obviously loved and cried my eyes out. So I'm very reluctant to do it because I don't want to, but I am going to say one and two.
Oh, my God.
She was sad when she was picking.
Did I sound sad?
You looked into the deadline.
You said reluctantly.
I am. I don't want to do it, but I can't think of something else in the miniseries that's on a par with... I don't know.
I get it.
We have a winner, and the winner is It's Chapter 1 and 2. For the record, I will say that watching Chapter 2 back-to-back with Chapter 1 makes for a much more enjoyable experience of Chapter 2. I think the wait between the two when they came out 2 years apart in the cinema, it was disappointing seeing Chapter 2. I quite liked watching it as a one big five-hour movie, as long as it was. I think the relationship between the kids in the new version is stronger than in the old. And I certainly think the craft, like you said, and the quality of the filmmaking is better. And it has been bugging me all week because it is that question of critical eye over the craft of filmmaking versus nostalgia.
Mm.
But it boils down to two words for me. Tim Curry.
Thank God.
I vote the miniseries from 1990. And I am... not going to have one of my little tantrums, but I am surprised that it did not win this week because that movie is
quite bad.
And yet, even though it is, in your words, Chris, bad, in your words, Victoria, boring, its legacy beyond those words and what it actually is so powerful because of Tim Curry.
You can't have one without the other. I will throw this bottle of water at you.
I wasn't going to say that. Because you can have one without the other because you got the book.
Yeah.
So it's not that.
Join us next week on our new podcast, Clash of the Legacies.
So no, I'm not angry. I'm disappointed.
Oh, that's worse.
I'm disappointed. It's 1990. Should have won, but it didn't. Vicky and Chris voted for the new version, so they are our winner this week. And then.
I know we've been here all day, but additional verdict. What was the best Stephen King movie of the month? I'm going with The Bloody Shining.
Victoria?
The Shining. By quite a way. I've had a bit of a weirdness about Gerald's Game in the last few weeks. I do think that was brilliant. It's not better than Misery, but it is very good, apart from the ending, which is shit.
Mm. Yes, so, it would have been weird if you'd picked Gerald's Game as your favourite of the month, having not picked it that week.
Yeah. No, it's obviously The Shining.
Okay, Al?
I'm not...
You're going to go for the TV movie of it?
Yeah, you are.
I fucking am as well. I was going to say that anyway.
What?
I absolutely think it is just... It's funny. I'm never going to not be scared by... Mm. Tim Curry appearing in that drain more than anything in any of the other movies we've covered.
That's great.
That moment belongs to that movie, which is why it's the best, not even a movie, that we've covered this month.
Love it.
Right then, horror is behind us. We have covered some fantastic horror movies. Halloween is just around the corner, but we're looking ahead to next week and something perhaps a little lighter.
Something light.
Yeah.
A palate cleanser.
Thanks.
My clue was something about History Brats.
Yeah, you've seen the History Boys, now watch the History Brats.
Alex.
You're welcome.
You have the movie Young Guns.
Okay.
And Vicky, you have the movie The Three Musketeers, the one that's got the Brat Pack in.
Yay!
I can't remember the year of it.
1993.
It's
available on Amazon. I paid for it in HD, which I never do.
So,
wait, what?
I never do.
You buy movies in SD if there's an option.
Yeah,
what is wrong
You're
with
disgusting.
You?
You're disgusting. That is a sackable offence.
My Wi-Fi isn't good. Honestly, it's not good enough to like...
Is that your excuse? Because I am looking at a replacement chair right now.
We once did a film, which you could only get in SD. And I remember you said, you were like, well, sorry about that, everyone, but enjoy it in SD. I was like, well, that's my every week. Like, it's no different for me.
Well, I will say that Young Guns and Three Musketeers, they're both...
Is your TV colour?
They're both available to rent on Amazon Prime and on the Sky Store, and Three Musketeers is also on Disney Plus.
Lovely business. That is Young Guns versus The Three Musketeers from 1993. Those are next week's movies. Do your homework. But in the meantime, thank you for listening to our countdown to Halloween, our month of King versus King on Clash Pod. Also, we have some news for you about our next live show. Yes, we told you another one was happening, and it is happening quite soon. On Thursday, November the 11th, that is Thursday, November the 11th, we are at the Loading Bar in Stoke Newington, London. So if you can get to Stoke Newington, London on Thursday, November the 11th, it is our first actual show in a bar. Yeah, we're in a bar, and so this is the Clash pairing we've decided on for that night. Tom Cruise's Cocktail versus Coyote Ugly. That's what we're doing. We hope you can make it. There's going to be themed cocktails. Fancy dress is optional, although obviously I'm going to be dressing up. And you can find all the details and buy tickets at eventbrite.co.uk. That's eventbrite, B-R-I-T-E, .co.uk. Just search Clash of the Titles. All the details are on there. We hope you can make it on Thursday, November the 11th for another Clash Pod Live. We'll be back on Monday talking Young Guns. Have a very, very happy Halloween. Bye-bye.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.